So just so that you know, I've asked that we have a time for a question and answer period at the end because I find that in my own sangha in New York, where we're doing something like a six-week non-residential retreat discussing aspects of patience, that there are many, many questions. So you'll have your opportunity to hear your thoughts and your questions. So as I mentioned, it was about 2 years ago that I had a book published called Pocket Peace, and I had the pleasure and the fun of being here with so many of you at that time. But I didn't tell you that the day after that book was published, the very next day, before 8 o'clock in the morning, my phone rang, and it was a friend saying, "Hey, Alan, congratulations. Great. What are you going to write next?" And I said, "Hey, patience." And he said, "Good idea." And so it began. And then I found that over the next several weeks, the more people asked, "What are you going to write next?" I found myself saying, "I think I really want to write about patience." And every time I said that, the response was the same. "Good, I need that book." And so going through the usual steps with agent, editor, publisher, everybody agreed, and we all found, oddly enough, that there hadn't been very much written about patience. And I concluded that no one was patient enough to write such a book. So I began my research by sending out a very simple, short questionnaire. And I sent out thousands of these. The questionnaire had just two questions. The first was, under what circumstance do you tend to lose your patience? And the second question was, what do you do about it? The first thing I learned was that most people don't want to talk about it. Thousands of questionnaires sent out, hundreds came back. Fortunately, enough to put together some conclusions. So, what do you think? And we don't need microphones for this. You can just call this out. What do you think was the number one reason people said they lost their patience? Cars.
In a hurry.
Being in a hurry.
Children.
Definitely have to be on the list, right?
Parents.
Having been one of both, I agree. Well, interesting enough, each of the things that you mentioned are related in a way to what people singled out. It seems that the number one reason that people said they lose their patience is when they feel they're not being heard. And by extension, when they feel they're not being seen. Or in other words, they have a sense of being invisible, of not mattering. So, you know, you can envision yourself in a traffic jam. When you all live around Washington, you don't know what a traffic jam is, so says the New Yorker. When you're in a traffic jam, it's as if no one sees you, no one hears you. They don't realize that you have an appointment, that you want to get home, that it's late, and they don't care. It's as if you don't matter. You open your window, you wave out there and say, "Hey, move out of my way," and they don't. The traffic just sits there. So that sense of not being seen and not being heard. Numbers 2 and 3 are a bit more obvious. People said Number two reason for losing their patience, when I'm tired. Number three reason, when I'm hungry. This begins to lose its aura of rocket science, doesn't it? Tired and hungry. Why does Alan write a book if all people need to know is get a little more sleep and eat? But I did anyway. So what really launched this was what I would call a moment of inspiration. And I didn't want to just write a book about patience where we could all learn about patience. I wanted to write something that would help us become more patient. So there's a little introduction where I borrowed the words of Aristotle, because it's exactly describing what I had in mind. He said, "This inquiry does not seek theoretical knowledge, for we are inquiring not to understand virtue, but to become more virtuous. Otherwise, our inquiry shall have been of little use. We look to examine the nature of actions, specifically how we are to do them. For this determines the very nature of character that evolves." So, that moment of inspiration, let me lead you into that. Excuse me. It is said that the next teacher we need will surely appear. Our job is to be ready. Some traditions suggest that when needed, the teacher can be a ferocious warrior. She wields a mighty sword as she faces the powerful inner forces of ego and conditioned thinking. Often it takes a dramatic event for the teacher to be heard. A crisis, perhaps, stemming from a serious accident, a life-threatening illness, the loss of a loved one, or an addiction that lands one in the gutter. Most of us meet more than one of these teachers on our life's journey. We tend to resist them at first, but then with courage and resolve, we do battle and ultimately forge some degree of victory. We accumulate particles of wisdom along the way as we traverse gracefully onward toward the finish line. The warrior image is often suggested because insights and clarity are frequently gained only through strenuous inner battles. Imagine then my surprise and delight when a great opening of consciousness suddenly revealed itself one evening with no drama, no angst, and no turmoil. My dear friend and I were reflecting casually about this and that, as we often do after dinner, when suddenly I sat up straight and asked her to repeat what she had just said. "Just about every mistake I have ever made and every unkind word I have ever spoken might have been avoided if I had been more patient." I thought it was a stunning statement, revealing remarkable insight. As I thought more about it, I realized that the same was likely true for me. I excused myself for a moment, dashed to the computer, and jotted down my first note. "Just about every mistake I have ever made and every unkind word I have ever spoken might have been avoided if I had been more patient." Actually, it took patience for me not to disappear for the rest of the evening so I could continue writing. But I did what any fully enlightened being would be. I came back, did the dishes, and took out the garbage. So let's be really fair up front. It takes patience to develop patience. It's not an easy road. No spiritual practice is an easy road. Well, I know when we sit here in the meditation center or in a church or in a temple, it all feels fine and it flows and we're with like-minded beings. But when we get outside and we get in that traffic jam, or the person in front of us online at the supermarket begins looking for that money that she was sure was here someplace, and where my grandson keeps taking the money from my purse, and that's why I can't find it. But I have a credit where. And anyway, this goes on for quite some time, and what happens to patience? Now, here's another thing. Isn't it an odd language that we use when we speak about patience? We say, I'm losing my patience. Or we say, I don't have a lot of patience. Doesn't that suggest that patience is some sort of a thing, a commodity that we can lose? But then again, we can also find if we remember where we lost it, but then otherwise, how do we find it? But that's so misleading, isn't it? Patience is a feeling. Impatience is a feeling. And like all feelings, and in the Buddhist tradition that teaches dependent origination, all things arise due to causes and conditions, or contingencies, if you prefer. So impatience is a feeling that only exists under certain circumstances, when causes and conditions come together. Right? Does that make sense? It's not something that we lose and find. We'll go into that in just a little bit more detail. But where should we really start? What is the starting place in an exploration of understanding of our patience? For many of us, the most difficult person with whom to be patient is oneself. We often graciously forgive others and praise their good intentions, even if the results of their efforts prove less than satisfying. Yet when we ourselves slip up and speak or act poorly, we can routinely find our own actions deplorable and even unforgivable. Patience with oneself is essential if we are to enjoy happiness and equanimity through life's constantly changing nature with its unfair and disruptive conditions. Now, I know many of us like to say, I'm not patient with myself, but I am patient with others. I invite you to think about that carefully. How do you give what you don't have? How do you give what you have not experienced? How would you know what to call it? I think it can be deceptive to believe that we are more patient with others unless we have learned to be patient with ourselves. No one is more worthy of your patience, of your love, of your compassion than you are yourself. Some of us have experienced so much impatience that we just assume we do not have a lot of patience. We seem to believe that an emotional state is something that is embedded in us and that we can't free ourselves from it. The current vernacular suggests that we are hardwired in a certain way and we cannot change. In truth, what happens is we experience an emotion and then too often attach to it as if it were an innate aspect of our very being. Some of us label ourselves an angry person, ignoring that the basic nature of sentient beings is more likely compassionate and kind, not angry and unpleasant. We allow ourselves to believe that anger and impatience are part of who we are, rather than understanding they are simply feelings that arise. Like anything else that arises, feelings pass away. They do not define character. Repeated outbursts of anger and frequent loss of patience most likely indicate fear and unhappiness. They are unpleasant to experience, but they are not fixed, permanent conditions. Again, it is important to remember that even if we frequently experience the arising of impatience or anger, it does not define who we are. Basic teaching of the Buddha, a characteristic of all things, anicca, right? Impermanence. Not only that everything changes, but today, scientists and researchers are able to prove that everything is changing moment to moment. They say everything is vibration, and that even this platform is more space than matter. I myself am probably a little too old to grasp this because I still think I'm sitting on something solid. Probably part of me hopes I'm sitting on something solid. Nevertheless, it is constantly changing. So sentences that begin with, I am the kind of person who, is going to end up being inaccurate. I am the kind of person who to this point has been, can be accurate. Okay? Embrace that change. We tend to think of anicca and the fact that everything is changing as a source of dukkha, as a source of our suffering. And it is, and it can be. But it is also our source of joy. It is how the cut on your finger heals. It is how illness heals and becomes better. It is how the market that is down rises and goes down again and rises. Those who think of patience as weakness and see anger as strength will be in for quite a revelation. In order for us to practice patience, we must have courage, wisdom, and a loving, compassionate heart. We must be wise enough to address disagreement with intelligence and thoughtfulness. We come to understand patience as noble and valiant. We discover that if we want to live in a peaceful world, we must develop a more peaceful world within. Now, I think that we need to look at the development of patience as a multi-tiered process. Most of us, when we were young, were taught some skills. And we can remember hearing that voice that said, okay, dear, just take a deep breath. Right? You heard that. Or count to 10. Or if you grew up just a little bit beyond that, this too shall pass. And these things we put in the category of skillful means, upaya. They're skills. They are not yet the development of true patience for reasons that we'll come to in a minute, but don't underestimate their value, because anything that can stop us in a moment when we might otherwise speak or act out of impatience can be extraordinarily valuable. Did you ever hear the term a crime of passion? A crime of passion was not premeditated. And our prisons are filled with people who committed a crime of passion. Impatience built, got out of hand, and something happened. I actually describe in this book one such event from interviews that I did, and I assure you it has a very, very sad ending. So these initial skills of perseverance, endurance, and being awake and alert enough to just stop, they're very significant. Now, when we look to develop a depth of patience, what we're talking about is to go in deeper so that less frequently do we even experience those moments when we need those skills. In other words, when we have to remind ourselves to count to 10, we are already agitated. But can we do something so that less and less frequently we reach that state of agitation, of turmoil? So this is where things get a bit chewy. It's a good way to describe it. You're going to have to chew on this a little bit. So we'll read slowly. Patience is born when we create a pause between our experience of a feeling and our response to that feeling. Without a pause, we are likely to find ourselves reacting in our conditioned manner. After all, that is what conditioning is. With a pause, there is at least the possibility of a more positive response. And certainly, we are less likely to cause harm. Patience lives in the gap between our experience of an event and our response to that experience. If we spend time with our experience, in other words, the thoughts, feelings, and sensations that arise, we can gain insight. Wisdom arises as we see things with greater clarity. Forgiveness has space to develop. Fires have a chance to cool. So the word wisdom appears here. Wisdom, as defined by Buddhists, is to see things as they really are. It has nothing to do with knowledge. To see things as they really are is the development of wisdom. When we see that the experience of sentient beings includes aging, illness, stress, and suffering, we can actually relax a bit and accept that it is the nature of things. It is the way things are. Perhaps if you or I had created the world, things would be different. But for now, this is it. This acceptance does not mean that we do nothing to alleviate suffering. Quite the opposite. It means that we can be patient and then take action that is well considered, wise, and compassionate, rather than reactive, unskillful, or vengeful. Patience, unlike popular misconception, is not characterized by passivity. It is alive, vital, and active. It is thoughtful and compassionate for oneself and for others. We can look at things, including our own impatience, with a sense of curiosity and investigation, asking, "What is this?" rather than with a judgmental, dismissive view. With curiosity, with a sense of humor. Don't leave your sense of humor at home. It makes the best padding under your butt when the ride gets bumpy. And it will. Perhaps you've noticed that. The Buddha saw that sustainable happiness was possible and could come about through our own efforts. While other traditions suggest that after the struggles of this life, there is the hope of peace and happiness in some type of paradise. The Buddha offered a path to peace and joy in this very life. When we see things as they really are, we can free ourselves from the delusions that lead to sorrow and experience the real joys and delights of each precious moment of this life right now. Now, here's where we're going to have a little fun together. I've been just waiting to bring this up in Washington. An open beginner's mind is a powerful tool for developing patience. Notice if you tend to be curious and remain open-minded about thoughts that are different or in opposition to your current views. Or do you quickly reject that which doesn't come easily or immediately seem right? Recognizing that we resist the new and different can reveal insights about our issues with patience. Now, why have I been thinking about Washington and speaking about this? We are entering into election season. How much of a beginner's mind have you developed? When you hear the views of the other candidate, how open is your mind? When a friend or colleague speaks of the views of the other candidate and praises them, are you really listening? Okay, this is not easy. Do you know that in November, if one candidate wins in a landslide, let's say wins 55% of the vote, 45% of the population will have voted for the other candidate. Are they all idiots? I know what you're thinking. We can play with this and have a little fun, but you might really want to look at this. If you would like to have a sense that you are being heard, isn't it only fair that you offer that to the other? Bring this into your home. Bring this into the workplace. But we get passionate about our candidate. And it's not easy. There is nothing that says you must switch over and agree with the other person. But do remember that just as you want to be heard, remember that number one reason people lose their patience? When they feel they're not being heard. I leave this in your hands, my dear Washingtonians. And by the way, we have fun with this in New York too, you know. So someone said, children, no question about it, most difficult job on earth, parenting. So far it seems that no one has ever perfected this, but we're all working on it and seeing what we can do. So I don't want to go into a whole lot of this. There's a whole chapter, and I tried to keep this on the light side, such as the very opening comment, two friends have a pillow in their home embroidered with the words, insanity is inherited. You get it from your children. And then later on in this chapter, a couple of lines that I think apply not only to what we offer to our children, but to what we offer to ourselves. When we teach a child to be truthful, we offer them the gift of an ethical life. When we teach a child to take responsibility for their actions, we offer them the gift of an honorable life. When we teach a child patience, we offer them the gift of a dignified life. And of course, we can turn that on ourselves. No matter what the external circumstances, your impatience can only exist within you. You develop patience by working on yourself, not by attempting to change others. Isn't this diametrically opposed to what we believe? If only he didn't speak that way, then I would be patient. If only in the office, if only the traffic, if only. And we would never run out of if onlys. The only place that one overcomes impatience is in what within oneself, because that's the only place it exists. There's a wonderful teaching that was offered by Shantideva, the 8th century Indian scholar, teacher. And he spoke about a man who wanted to figure out a way to walk on the earth, which was tough and jagged, and every time he would walk, his feet would be bleeding. And he came up with the idea that he could cover the entire earth with leather. And then wherever he walked, it would be smooth. So he began this project, and it didn't take that long before he realized he could never come up with enough leather. And then he had another idea. If I cover my feet with leather, then wherever I walked, the road would be smooth. We'll let that speak for itself. So we do have some interesting people in New York City, as I'm sure you know. I'll tell you about one of them who's my neighbor. Now, you can't do anything about the heavy traffic on the highway or the long line at the supermarket, but you can learn how to not be miserable. I have a neighbor who, whenever I see her, comments about the awful weather. In the summer, it is disgusting. In the winter, unbearable. One lovely Tuesday in the spring, she advised me not to get too comfortable because it was going to rain over the weekend. This poor lady is doomed. Every day, without exception, there is going to be some kind of weather. There's no place for her to escape. So often, you cannot do anything about external circumstances, but you can always do something about what is going on in your mind. The Buddha said, the whole experience is in your mind. Opening lines of the Dhammapada, yes? Life, the life experience is mind. Mind precedes everything. It is all our perceptions, our experience of what is going on. I have sat with people who knew that they were in the last hour of their life. And they could say, life was great. And I want to go out that way. I've been in third world countries where, by our standards, they had nothing. And it was joyful. And come share a meal. And I have friends who are deeply concerned because the butler is wearing a uniform that had a spot on it. So we want to look at our perceptions, how we are experiencing life, because it is out of that experience that impatience will arise or patience will give us a sense of stability, which is not easy with gain and loss, praise and blame, ups and downs. But they don't have to be this. They can settle into this. This. So we'll bid a fond farewell to patience, the art of peaceful living, with some words of the Buddha and someone who came right after the Buddha. The Buddha taught, in the sky there is no distinction between east and west. People create distinctions out of their own thoughts and then believe them to be true. We create our experience and believe it to be reality. When others don't perceive things as we do, we can find ourselves in conflict. We might lose patience. As wisdom develops, however, we see that there is nothing wrong, nothing to defend. There are just different views. Ultimately, the art of peaceful living comes down to living compassionately and wisely. With patience, compassion arises. With patience, wisdom arises. With patience, we are at peace. And about 300 years before the Common Era in India, Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutras, the groundwork for our practices of yoga today, Patanjali wrote this: when you are inspired by a great purpose, all thoughts break their bonds. The mind transcends limitations. Consciousness unfolds in every direction, and you find yourself in a new, unbounded, and glorious world. You realize yourself to be a greater person by far than you ever imagined you could be. So, we have some lovely folks who have microphones in their hands, and when they see your hand go up, they're going to patiently come running to you to hear what your questions or thoughts might be. And let's say I said that. Am I right that we do? There we have one and another. So the one thing I would just ask, and here's where I'll ask you to follow a tradition that I learned in the Thich Nhat Hanh community, the Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh. He always asked that we speak from our own experience and not comment on what someone else before us has said. And that helps us create a safe place. So, what's on your mind?
My name's Paul. Hi, Paul. I have a daughter, and patience is really has a lot to do with her hormones. We've actually had some tests and stuff, and she has some hormone imbalance. It's like she's still five and throwing tantrums, you know, and it seems like it's more than something mental than it is something like chemistry. And just thought might want to talk about that a little bit.
Does this cause her to become impatient, or it's what you have to deal with?
Um,
Yeah, because when she'll get hurtful, and when usually I get hurt, I get angry. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of a default mechanism. I've tried through a lot of the readings with the Dalai Lama and stuff like that to notice the hurt more than I notice the anger, and that helps me with her. But it's just funny how chemistry works with it.
Yes, sometimes it's funny, not always. Paul, in this book, or for everyone, there are four what we call profiles in patients. They're interviews that I did, and they're rather extensive with people who have had to deal with extenuating circumstances in their lives. And one of them would be very appropriate for you to read. It's about a parent dealing with a child also. I think that this is where we see the truth of it takes patience to develop patience. All of this, anything that we see like this or other teachings, sometimes I think that we have to say it's all well and good, but what happens when we get out in real life and we're dealing with real situations? I think we have to go slowly. I think that we have to realize that we're dealing with a situation with someone we love, that what is arising within me. And compassion and love for oneself is vitally important in the role of a caregiver. It is important for anyone, but particularly for a caregiver. Because we can get very down on ourselves simply because we're losing patience. Our patience, even though, you know, as we spoke about, is not a commodity, but it's arising under causes and conditions. And it sounds like those causes and conditions can come together frequently and probably with considerable intensity. So a loss of patience would be understandable. It's difficult. I often wish that in circumstances like this, I had some profound answer that would make everything better. And I don't. I know it's a difficult road. I think the most difficult years of my own life were my daughter's teenage years, who people might describe as a perfectly normal teenager. And what I came to realize is once I learned how to deal with drugs, sex, and crime, I would do just fine. But it was very, very difficult. I hope that you have some help, and it's not something that you have to take on by yourself. But again, care for yourself. I think the more you are able to care for yourself and not be afraid of something like loving yourself and having compassion for yourself will open up a greater depth. But that it will make it all easy and just happen magically, I'm sure that will not be the case. There are specific exercises at the end of all of these chapters. The first one is really, I think, is very important, and that is to create, if you do want to develop a depth of patience, is to make sure that you are motivated to do so. It sounds to me as if you would be. And to develop a real motivation that is yours means, as I suggested, to take a week where just 5 minutes a day or less, you sit down and ask yourself, why do I want to do the work to become a more patient person? And when the answers come up like, well, everybody should be more patient, throw that out. Or because my wife says I should be more patient, I'm sure it's true, but throw it out. Because it's not what's going to really get you motivated. What's going to get you made motivated is the stuff that probably doesn't feel very good. The things that you've said just recently that you wish you hadn't said. A loss of temper. When you realize that you have done harm, and we all do. So you do this exercise not judgmentally, but with a sense of investigation, of looking. And if it's not there, fine. Perhaps you already have a depth of patience. But if you can find those spots that sting a little bit, stay with them. You're not a bad person. You suffer from being a human being. And that can help you develop that motivation that you're going to need when you hit those bumpy patches. Ah, you have the microphone. Great.
Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for being here and for sharing your with us. I have found myself for a long time to be a judgmental person, conditioning about, that's wrong, you shouldn't do that. And yet I'm sensing from your presentation there's such a connection, it's just maybe just a shift of the word, between judgmental and being impatient. Can you comment, please?
Sure. When you find, leave the microphone for just 1 second, when you find yourself being judgmental, does it feel good?
It does not feel good.
Never feels good?
Never feels good.
Ah. So the Buddha, interesting the way the Buddha offered his teachings, he never spoke about you should do this, you shouldn't do this. You know, he offered his teachings from a perspective of this is what I have learned. This has been my experience. So it's very significant that he who we call the Buddha, the awakened one, was just a human being like us. And even as he taught his own son, Rahula, when Rahula was only 7 years old, he said he wanted to come study with his father. He said exactly the same thing. If you find yourself saying and doing things that you can see are of benefit to yourself and to others, continue to do them. If you find yourself saying or doing something that causes harm to yourself and to others, you'll want to abandon those things. What he left out of that teaching, and this is why my own view, by the way, is I think the Buddha relied heavily on our intelligence. He relied, in my view, on, if I see that I am doing something that causes me dukkha or suffering or stress or turmoil, and I see that, I'll want to stop doing that. However, habit energy and conditioning are very powerful forces. So therefore, we have to look at the concept of practice. Because we will slip up, and we will slip up again. And that's where we watch the judgmental mind, and using our intelligence say, am I serving myself well by being critical, or can I just look at this and say, ah, that didn't work so well, did it? I wonder if there's another approach. Let me see if there is. And there remains a lightness about that. You know, I'm just not a bad person. And there's no point in trying to convince yourself that you are, because it's not really going to work. If it works for a short time, essentially we put that time aside and say, okay, I had to go through that in order to get to here. And we find a balance. So much of this is about balance. Oh, I'm this terrific, enlightened person. Boy, I hope the Buddha's waiting for me because I'm just about right there. Well, this is getting a little out of balance for most of us, maybe not for you. So has to come back a little bit. So I still have a little bit of enlightenment still left to go. And if I go this far and I become really self-critical, see, it's almost like being on a, is that a seesaw, right? So you stand on the seesaw, both legs like that, and oh, if it goes a little too far that way, so you come back this way. And you know, you ever watch the children when they were doing that? They're having fun. It just, it doesn't have to be drudgery. It can be, you know, if it was me, sometimes I like to suggest that you put a little space between yourselves. So I would say, oh, look at Alan experiencing impatience. Wow. That's a lot of impatience. That's just about anger. Whoa. But you see, what I'm doing here is I'm giving up ownership. Instead of, I am impatient, it's the experience of impatience is arising. And I see that arising with interest. Isn't that interesting? And if you do that enough and you gain experience, then Alan even drops out, and what you have is, wow, look at the arising of impatience. Look at the arising of anger. Look at the arising of joy. Are you familiar with Mark Epstein's book, Thoughts Without a Thinker? That's what he's saying. Thoughts arise, but they have no owner. We don't want to go into the teaching of no self tonight because do we have six more hours? No, we don't. But you can still get this idea. You don't have to own this impatience, which you can't do anyway. But sometimes we treat these things as if they define character. I am a judgmental person. You are experiencing judgment arise. Isn't that interesting? What do you know about that? Okay, oh, look. And if it has that lightness, everything, said the Buddha, arises and passes away, as will all of us. So don't get too hung up on it, because if you do, then I'll give you this to think about. 100 years from now, there will not be one person on the face of the earth who knew you. So have a good time. Enjoy your practice. And if right now you're only 8 weeks old, and I don't know why you'd be here if you were, then you can hope that another newborn comes along and lives for 104 years, and that would prove me to be wrong, which is just fine. Who else? Do you have a microphone? Let's get you a microphone. And here it is.
Hi. Along with the idea of self-compassion as a spiritual energy to have patience, and then the idea what you just coupled, naming things to get a little space, is really helpful. And it sounds like my question was if you could speak just a little more about the sacred pause. Those are part, it seems to me, pausing. Because if you have self-compassion, that is kind of a pause. And then if you're going to name something instead of going, you know, you shithead, you just go, oh, that happened. If you could, I see them all interrelated, but if I have a lot of challenging about pausing in the moment when someone really pisses me off or something really bad happens. I did a big show in New York and someone chipped a very valuable ceramic and they took no responsibility. So the short of it was I was left holding the bag. I'm really still upset about it. But I pause, but I'm still, I have hate for them that I said you're a dumbass not suing him, and then back and forth. It's a lot of money, so the pause, if you could speak, because I really lost my patience.
Well, I noticed this right here in this building that you use the term the sacred pause, which is Tara's, of course. When I was writing this book, I wanted the subtitle to be the sacred pause, so I called Tara and I said, I can't do this, can I? It's really your expression. She said, you can if you want, but I didn't. But it is. I think that pause is sacred. The reason I think it's sacred is because in that pause, we can save dignity. We can even save a life. If you think about it. But again, seems to be the theme of the evening, it doesn't mean it's easy. Someone destroys your work in a single careless moment.
They chipped it, but it still hurts the value.
Uh-huh.
A Picasso okay. vase, okay.
Yeah. Or it doesn't even have to be of that value. It can be when we feel threatened in any way. What we look to do to change that is to go this way and change the outer circumstance. Change that which is causing, in my view, impatience to arise, causing anger to arise. Because if I can stop that, obliterate that, squelch that, then I believe I'll be just fine. The Buddha said there's another way. He said if you continue to go that way, it's just not going to happen. But again, it doesn't mean that it's easy when something has happened that's fairly dramatic or pushes our buttons that suddenly we say, wait, what is going on within me? And that's really what this pause is about. Something comes at me this way. We just call it an event, words, actions, whatever. And as I become attuned to this, and that's essentially the practice, as I become more and more attuned to what goes on within me at the beginning, as it arises, at the inception, and I recognize that, and I say, ah, okay. But it's not easy to do. It really does take work because our conditioning is to go that way. You said that, I am feeling this, therefore I will go this way. And all that happens is we increase the battle. We do it on a personal level, we do it on a global level. We haven't learned on a global level since the beginning of humankind. We go to war, right? We go to war to obliterate those who are stopping peace in the world. So we believe we go to war to create peace. How's that working out? I mean, on that basic level, we really don't get it. But I think working individually, I think we have a chance to get it. But it's going against the tide. It's rebellious. The Buddha was a rebel. Go ahead.
I noticed it was a vetting committee. I was required to leave my booth, and they were vetting objects. They chipped it, and they wrote a note, you should have put it chipped. After convincing the promoter who didn't know me, I wouldn't have left chips all over. After 4 days, they believed me. Now, I noticed everyone was pointing fingers, and I was pointing fingers, they were pointing fingers, and then I stopped and went, this is unfair. This is just unfair. So I would say, okay, this too. I was so pissed I didn't come to class one day because I was really pissed. I didn't want to be angry. So I thought, you know what, I said, can I sue her? And she said, I prefer you not to sue my best dealer that did this. So I just in my head, and the only thing I can say is, well, this is part of business, but it's not enough. It's just like not enough. It doesn't take away from the sacred pause, but I'm still a little, like, This feels like first day here, kindergarten. And that's okay, but I'm not loving it. I just wish. I'm trying not to blame. I'm just trying to see that, but I don't know what to do. I'm just kind of at a loss, so that's just.
Were you pleased with the piece when you made it?
I didn't make it. Pablo Picasso did.
I'm sorry?
It was a ceramic of a.
Did you make it?
No.
No.
It was a Picasso.
Ah, okay. So I don't know if this will help, but years and years ago, with the early part of my life, I was a professional singer, Broadway opera. And then I began to teach singers. And in the teaching, one thing that I would point out is you do a performance on Friday night, and then the performance is over. A critic writes something about it the next day. The critic likes it, dislikes it. The performance itself doesn't change. The performance is what it is what it was. And nothing can change that, no matter what is said. It's very difficult. If the critic writes a wonderful review, that can be good for your career. If they write a bad review, it can be bad for your career. But one thing that doesn't change is the act itself, the event itself. So we want to always feel clean within about our words and our actions. And my own experience is that we have a much, much better chance if we get in touch with what's really going on within, no matter what is going on around us. Yes, there will be blaming. Try blaming. See if it does any good. A lot of these things we have to try and say, gee, that didn't really get me very much. Now let me see if there's another way. And I have a feeling that we have used up our time. Am I right?
Yep.
I am right. But we can take... I'm going to be out here, actually. I have a pen with me. I'd be delighted to inscribe books and answer questions.
Can everybody give Alan a big thanks?
Go safely, go patiently, go in peace.